I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by the 10K Collective. The 10K Collective is a collection of men and women who are doing at least $25,000 a month on Amazon in the UK, US, Europe, doesn't matter, but that is the figure as a minimum. Now, why that figure? Because it means you get to meet with like-minded people who are serious about Amazon, who are doing well, and who are ambitious to do better rather than knocking around with newbies, which isn't going to help you if you want to scale up from six figures a month to seven figures or whatever you're ambitious to do, four to five figures. We have people who are doing up to around the quarter of a million a month mark. And as I say, the lowest is 25K. So it's still quite a big spread, but we have amazing things that get shared. You will get 30 minutes each, minimum of 20, 25, even in a really busy month. And there's only 8 to 12 people at any given meeting. So what do we cover in the meetings? Well, we cover topics from how to stay in stock, make more money by not missing out and not being out of stock, dominating a market and the mindset needed, handling whole container loads, how to predict stock needed, for example, how to get a product on primetime British TV for free, as one of our members did back at Halloween last year. So these are not prescribed by me and it's not a set course. It is simply what comes up, what you need to handle right now to move your business forward. It's very simple, robust format. It's doing really well. We've got great loyalty from the members. I think out of 10 people that have joined it so far, about 8 are still with us after several months, which is a real testament to the fact that they're getting value and there's a great feel of community and we have a lot of fun. We take business seriously, but we also try not to take ourselves too seriously. We have a lot of fun. We're very open and we have a lot of serious debates that actually result in people doing stuff and taking action, like opening up in America, like going to Germany, like, you know, doubling their orders. I mean, serious action takes place as a result of these meetings. And it's also good fun. You'll need to be able to get to London as well as doing 25,000 a month minimum, roughly in dollars. And it's application only. So if you want to check that out, go to amazingfba.com/mastermind. Make sure you click through to the 10K Collective page rather than applying for the Zero to Hero Mastermind, which is just for those who are just starting out. Thanks very much for listening. Now, on with the show. Ladles and jelly spoons, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Michael Veazey at Amazing FBA. Today, I'm really delighted to bring on really quite a big hitter in the marketing world, Rick Cesari of RickCesari.com, who, amongst other things, helped launch really household names like the George Foreman Grill, the Lean Green, Lean Mean Grilling Machine, if I got that right, and the GoPro camera, which are really, really famous brands. So Rick absolutely knows what he's talking about. And we're going to specifically dive into video marketing, which is his sort of ninja skill. So Rick, a warm welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, fantastic to have you here. And funnily enough, I know you were here in London, in Hampstead, North London, a few weeks ago in person, but now you're the other side of the pond and I'm in London. So the miracle of the internet connecting us in real time.
I have to say, Michael, that I really enjoyed my visit in London. It's the first time I had a chance to spend any time there and hope to get back soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And where are you speaking to us from today?
I'm from in Seattle, Washington, home of Amazon.
Excellent. So round the corner from you. So Rick, obviously you've got an incredibly impressive story. Just those two names, you know, the George Foreman Grill that I won't attempt to say the exact word of it, and GoPro. Mm-hmm. Those are massive brands, very, very famous. So obviously you've got some amazing stories to tell. So give us a bit of a sort of compressed backstory of what brought you to where you are today.
Great. Let me just give you a little bit of background just for your listeners out there, showing that it's not always a straight line from, you know, where you start and where you end up. I actually have a biology degree and was planning on going into marine biology. And I took a little bit of time off after school and started buying and selling real estate. And then I got into promoting real estate and learned a lot about direct-to-consumer marketing by promoting real estate seminars. That led to my first business. I was passionate about health and nutrition. And my first business was called Trillium Health Products. And we developed the Juice Man Juicer and the Bread Man Bread Machine. And basically, we're teaching people about how to eat a healthier diet and using these products to help them do that. And that business was at the right products at the right time. The type of marketing we did, it just took off. And we went from zero to 75 million in only 4 years And we sold that company to a retail consumer company in Chicago called Sultan Housewares. And Sultan was the company that developed the George Foreman grill. And we did all of the marketing for that. Along the way, you've mentioned the George Foreman grill and GoPro, but some of the other products that I worked with were the Sonicare toothbrush, OxiClean, Rug Doctor, and many more. And one of the things I want to share with your listeners, Michael, is that I didn't get involved with these companies when they were big and they could afford to hire an ad agency. Almost every one of these was a startup company or doing very low in sales. And then we were able to come in and magnify the success they were having by using some direct response or direct-to-consumer marketing.
Very, very interesting. Wow. I mean, first of all, there's some incredibly impressive names there, just to echo that. And yeah, I was going to say, I have to say at this point, you know, the guy who wrote the book on it, you've got this book, which I have to say I bought, which is very useful. I only managed to read the first bit of it because we only spoke the other day, but by now, subtle title, I like it. So tell me a bit more about that idea of direct response marketing, and let's see if we can tie that in with how relevant that might be to Amazon sellers as well.
Well, kind of the difference between direct, and I'll go, it'd be really basic, but one of the differences between direct response marketing and what they call brand marketing, in direct response, you're basically able to measure every single advertisement or advertising dollar that you spend, and you can quickly see whether an advertising is paying for itself. And so what you're trying to do is create a model where if you spend a dollar on advertising, you're generating $2 in revenue, regardless of the distribution channel. It doesn't matter if it's TV, if it's on Facebook, if it's on Amazon, wherever you're doing that. And if you can do that, then you can leverage that and help make the business grow. And so the direct response is really kind of the strategies that you use to get a consumer to take a specific action once they read your advertisement.
Okay, so that would include for Amazon sellers, well, people who primarily sell Amazon as their channel. And I like the fact that you've distinguished between the distribution channel and the marketing channels. And I think that's a very important conversation I was having the other day with some guys, a mastermind that I run, the 10K Collective, for some more ambitious people who are scaling up really quickly. But we'll come back to that thought. So hold that thought. But the other thing is you're basically saying then Amazon ads, Facebook ads, Google ads, anything like that would come directly under what you would classify as direct response marketing. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's different ways of approaching it. And, you know, for anybody out there that's, you know, your listeners, they're trying to be successful on Amazon, the more that they learn about direct-to-consumer marketing or direct response marketing and the principles, the better off that they'll be with helping to market their products on Amazon or any other channels that they move into. And the thing that I've found in doing this for over 30 years is I've leveraged information I learned when I was younger, when people were still using, and this will tell you how old I am, when people were still using direct mail and print ads and newspaper ads. But you know, the basic tactics and principles of direct marketing and direct response marketing still work and still hold true, because you're dealing with human nature and human psychology. And so the selling principles that work in one marketing channel tend to work in most other marketing channels.
That's very, very interesting. And I think that what I loved, I was going to try and push this episode in a very tactical direction, but I think actually what keeps coming back more and more from more sophisticated business people as I speak to them over time is that if you get the principles right, then you can develop tactics from it. Whereas if you get stuck in tactics, they tend to disappear quite swiftly. And especially I have to say in the Amazon world, either because everyone copies it, because it's a bit of an echo chamber, as Will Chernland, who's a very smart guy within the sort of narrower Amazon space, calls it the Amazon echo chamber. It's either that or Amazon changes its policies overnight. So I love the fact that we're starting with principles, actually. So what would you say are the main principles of direct response marketing, if they're sort of timeless principles that hold true, whether it's print ads or direct mail or now Amazon ads or Facebook ads, for example?
Well, and this will help your Amazon listeners, but I like to talk about five keys, and probably one of the most important, and this would help differentiate your products on Amazon is, and I know if you have multiple SKUs, this might be a little bit harder, but it's always important if you're trying to push a certain product or service to establish what the unique selling proposition is. What makes your product different than anything else? To give you a quick example, when we were first marketing juice machines, the only other people that were selling them at the time were Braun and Krupps, and they were German engineering companies, and they approached it like they were selling an appliance, and they focused on features like stainless steel blade or half horsepower motor. And what made us successful is that we made our juicer unique, even though it was a juice extractor, by really focusing on the health benefits of the juice and the fact that if you drank the juice from the machine, that you could have more energy, lower cholesterol, you know, help you with anti-aging, things like that. And we focused on the health message. And so all the big brands and products we talked about, Sonicare toothbrush is another example. It was a Sonic toothbrush. And at the time, it was selling for $150 when you could buy a toothbrush for $1 or $2. You still can. And if we had just put that on the store shelf, it would just sit there. But we had to educate people that the Sonic technology, which is the feature, the benefit of that is it cleans beyond the bristles. And we were able to position that against every other toothbrush in the market, and it took off. So I guess the most one important principle is to look at your product or service and how you can differentiate that by positioning it a little bit different than any other market, any other products in the marketplace.
Makes a lot of sense. And often that is now, I'm going to say, well, it's oft talked about knowledge, although not that well implemented. But what you've added is two layers to that. If I understand that, first of all, you've got to get a USP, unique selling point. But you mentioned two things. One is really hammering the benefits way more than the features. And not only that, but you seem to be selling like an ultimate benefit, get healthy or have really super clean teeth, as opposed to just the sort of the nuanced little micro benefits, but also use the word educate as well. So tell me a bit more about how you look at those ultimate benefits and education. How does that play into the USP thing?
Yeah, so I think if there's one big consistency through every product success I've had, I've approached it from the standpoint of how can I educate the consumer about my product and the benefits. You were just talking about the benefits, and there's an old saying that I really love that features tell and benefits sell. And if they understand clearly your benefits, then you don't have to actually sell them the product. They'll make the decision to buy it based on the information that they have. And a lot of times marketing is finding the distribution channel where you can best educate the consumer so they can make an informed decision about why they should buy your product. And, you know, people say that marketing's gotten more difficult, but I think actually the opportunity to, and the channels that exist today, whether it be social media, Facebook, like Google, Amazon, the opportunities of reaching the people in a specific niche are actually easier than they used to be. It used to be quite expensive to try and get into mass advertising. And now I think that I'm seeing a lot of companies, I call them mini brands, be successful because they're able to leverage one particular area and get their information out and educate the consumer.
Okay, very, very interesting. So tell us a bit about that. And so, first of all, you don't have to sell it if they understand the benefits. It's all really about being able to educate the consumer into the benefits, and then the thing, they make the decision to buy. So there's a kind of momentum there, I guess. So tell me a bit more about the channels thing then. So let's start with Amazon directly, and then let's look off that. Sure. First of all, Amazon famously has a lot of control over its brand, and that goes two ways. One is that we get to leverage the Amazon brand as third-party sellers. So often people just buy from Amazon and they don't care that it's Michael Beasley's brand or Rick Cesaro's brand or anyone else's. Mm-hmm. And that's a two-edged sword because we get amazing conversion rates, the traffic is there, the trust is there, but it's harder to educate people about our brand separately. So is there any scope within the Amazon marketplace to actually educate the consumers about our brand at all? Or is that something that we have to do off Amazon, as you said, social media, YouTube, whatever else?
From my experience, and we were talking a little bit before we started this, and I was telling you that I work with a couple of big Amazon sellers. Let's just use one example, a company called Pluggable. And if your listeners want to look them up on Amazon, you can see. But here's a company that competes with the biggest electronic giants, and they're the largest seller of docking stations on Amazon. And if you look at what they did from an education standpoint, they basically have a website. They only sell through Amazon. That's they do a seven-figure business on Amazon. And what they did from an education standpoint is they have a website and they used video basically to explain almost every one of their products. So there goes ties in to the consumer education. So even though they're only selling through Amazon, they've still managed to educate the consumer through their own website, the pluggable website, with a lot of videos that explain every single product. And I have several, you know, other examples that we'll talk about over the course of our interview, but that's a perfect example of someone is leveraging consumer information. They're using video to educate people, and the results are showing up on Amazon, and it's setting their product apart from all of the other products out there. And then right. Just one other thing just that I mentioned, because I just had breakfast with the owner of that company a couple days ago, Bernie Thompson, and he said the other thing that separates his business from everybody else is the level of customer service that they offer. And that's another thing that, again, is off Amazon. You can't have a lot of contact, you know, with the consumers, but for whatever reason, at least his products need a lot of explanation, a lot of help. And his company provides that, whereas some of the other companies he's competing against aren't able to do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, when it comes to very technical products, and on Amazon, you don't have to be very technical for you to need help. For example, I sell little stand lights for music things, which are pretty much this kind of design, right? There's an LED light that clips on. Yeah. This is an exact example.
I have one of those, like a reading light.
Yeah, exactly. So people use them as reading lights. But the point is, for me, it's pretty simple. You press a button, the light goes off. You press another button, the light goes off, on again. But it, you know, I thought, well, it doesn't need anything. I can't even get this thing to clamp properly on here. Yeah. So how do you get it to clip on things, I should say? Or how do you turn it on off? Surprisingly, people need guidance with the most mundane things. And I do think it's one of those things that on Amazon specifically can lead to rude reviews pretty swiftly. So, you know, in this sort of narrow Amazon seller mindset of, oh my God, a rude review or even a 3-star review, that's definitely worth having. But let's zoom back out.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That light's a really great example because there are probably, and you know this, maybe dozens of people selling a similar type light.
Oh, crazy amounts. Yeah. This is very, very
typical. If you were a little bit different from the standpoint of having a video that explains exactly how to use the light in your home or different uses in your home. And the second part of that, which would make you a little bit different, you're actually showing versus just a product shot. You're just holding it up. But if you're showing people using it, people can relate. You're basically kind of giving them ideas of how they might use it in their home. And again, you're the only one doing that on Amazon. The other people aren't. And so all of a sudden, you're a little bit different, and it's going to generate more customer reviews, which will have a snowball effect and help you sell more.
I agree. Well, that's the funny thing about these lights. I got them sent from a supplier because, as I said, I've been selling music stand lights, and actually people are using them for reading on their headboards and specifically not waking their spouse up, it seems. So it's quite a narrow particular thing, which I've not exploited, and that's a possibility. But the other thing is I've kind of sold myself on this light. I chose not to sell it as an Amazon seller because I thought there were many that looked exactly the same and were the same model. That's the problem with the Chinese, right? They copy each other. There's no IP sacredness about intellectual property there. And that's a risk for us as sellers as well, if you're private labeling. But then also I started using it at home and I use it for washing up and I use it for podcasts. Like, how random is that? Now, if I was selling a podcast kit, I could sell this light as an intrinsic part of a very simple DIY podcast kit, including this thing, which is actually a photographic sort of background, which is very cheap compared to a green screen or something sophisticated. So yeah, you're right. I mean, even in my own personal experience of a product that I was considering selling, and the only reason I got it is as a sample, I use it all the time. So I think you're right. There is something very powerful indeed about what you're selling, I suppose, is not so much a product, but you're selling people almost an idea of how to do it.
In this case, you weren't selling a light. It goes back to what we were saying before. You're selling the benefits of the light and how you use it. And all the different uses you're showing people is going to make them think, hey, that would work for me. And the fact that, again, you're the only one doing that sets you apart. And it's just about thinking about products, not as a product, like you hold it up and say, this is a light I get in China. How do I use that light? And that's the most effective marketing message that you can communicate.
Yeah, that makes a total amount of sense. So coming back then to this idea of educating people with Pluggable, if that's the company you were discussing, obviously doing very, very well. Now, you talked earlier about the difference between the marketing channels and distribution channels. So just to clarify my thoughts on this for anyone listening about Amazon, obviously we tend, when you start out, certainly, and there's a mentality that can persist very strongly that you think you have to do everything on Amazon or you're not a, quote, legitimate Amazon seller, which is kind of insane. But I know enough people who do it, and I've caught myself at it, to know that it's a thing. So I just want to say to everyone listening, Amazon can be a marketing channel, as in you've got shoppers there. It can be a sales channel, and it can be a fulfillment channel if you're using FBA. Or it can be just a sales channel because you drive the traffic from, for example, Facebook ads, and you fulfill by merchant. And friends of mine are starting to do that. So coming back then to Pluggable, for example, you were mentioning their website. So would you say that the order of events is that people come to their website and are directed to Amazon as the sales channel? Or are they educating people on Amazon itself?
I would say that most of their education right now is on their website. But they're a perfect example. As we go on with the podcast, we're going to talk about some of the video marketing. But they do a very good job on their Amazon site with posting videos on there that explain what they do. So there's a little bit of education on, you know, in both places, but obviously the majority of the ones they can do, because of the limitations that are, you know, put on sellers by Amazon, happens off Amazon. And so people might be searching for a particular product. They might go to Amazon. They might see the Pluggable, and then they'll go from the Pluggable, and then they say, I want to do a little more research, and they go to the website, the Pluggable website, and then they have all of the information and videos there. So they're doing the next step beyond what the other product marketers are doing.
So would you say that the order of events is then that they get found on Amazon, but they get a sort of confirmation of their brand off Amazon, and then they come, the consumer comes back to Amazon to buy? Is that about the right sort of order of events as you understand it?
I would say that it's probably, I'm hard to put a percentage on it, but I would say it's not all of it is in that order. Some of it happens the reverse way, where people are searching for a particular product, they Google it, and they might find the Pluggable website, and they find the information on the website, and then there's from the website, basically it directs them to Amazon. And I think it's kind of, I don't know, I'd have to talk to Bernie and find out what the split is, but in my experience in doing direct-to-consumer marketing, like if we're running a big advertising campaign on TV, and I'll just go back 5 years ago, 10 to 15% of the sales might have come from Amazon. Some would come directly from the TV, and then most would come from the website. And now Amazon has come up. If you run an advertisement, like a mass advertisement, about 50% of the sales will, 40 to 50% of the sales will come through Amazon. So Amazon's reach and distribution, and you know from being involved in it, is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and growing more and more. So
that's very interesting. So in other words, Amazon ends up being the sort of end destination for the actual buying transaction by the sound of it, both because of their distribution, but I guess also because of the trust they built with the consumers. And apart from anything else, I guess I read recently something like 64% of Amazon, of US households, don't just have an Amazon account, but they have a Prime account. So I guess it's kind of like TV in the 1960s or 70s, right? The penetration, if that's the right word, is so deep, saying it's such a big percentage of households, that Amazon's kind of a go-to ready-made channel. So you're just tapping into that already. Would you say those are accurate sort of perceptions?
Yeah, that's accurate. But the one mindset that I want to dispel, and the success I've had and some of the other brands we'll talk about that are selling on Amazon that I've worked with, is even though Amazon is such high penetration and such a big distribution channel, I'm just in the firm belief that you need to, if you want to grow your business, and again, this won't apply to all your listeners, but if you want to grow your business, that you need to be in different distribution channels in addition to Amazon. I look at Amazon, as big and as powerful as it is, as a distribution channel, just like your website can be a distribution channel, online, other online stores and marketplaces. And I think it's important as you're growing your business, because there's a synergy that happens between all of them. Not every buyer, even though the penetration is so huge, is always going to buy on Amazon, and it's always not a price issue. It's more just a human nature and how they want to purchase the product. And that's just my own personal philosophy. It's not something that your listeners need to follow necessarily. I just like to make a product available because not everybody shops on Amazon. I know that might be heresy to you, but that's true. And it's a belief that I bring from a marketing standpoint that there, you can create a good synergy by being in a bunch of different distribution channels. And one of the things I'm seeing, and you and I talked about this earlier, is a lot of Amazon, not a lot, but a lot of Amazon sellers I'm working with are looking to protect themselves because of changes that Amazon can make. And one of the ways of doing that is developing some other e-commerce or other ways of selling in addition to Amazon. And that's, again, something that I'm seeing with some of the larger Amazon sellers at this point.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what's very interesting to me is to follow this sort of journey across from other platforms to Amazon and then kind of back out again as people develop their businesses. And I've got a member of the 10K Collective, for example. He's been running a family business for years. They started off selling wholesaling to brick and mortar stores. Then they got their own e-commerce store, and now they're very, very focused on Amazon. But of course, there's massive suspension risks attached to that. If you get your whole account suspended, even if you avoid that, then individual product listings can get suspended. For example, IP allegations, allegations of intellectual property, infringements, for example, patents or trademarks. And the thing is, the allegation is enough to get a suspension, and you have to kind of prove your innocence, which is one of the major downsides of Amazon. So people at the same kind of level in the mastermind, of whom there are a couple, they're doing around sort of $250,000 a month upwards, tend to say things like, well, actually, they're wanting to develop a brand that becomes more independent of Amazon again. So I think it's funny how the journey has gone. I think you've just reflected it yourself. Like 5 years ago, you ran a TV ad campaign, 5 to 10%, maybe 15% of the sales were on Amazon. Now they're 40, 50%. So it's very seductive, and it does give an immediate payoff, but it's also a risk. So yeah, I think both things are kind of true, really. It's very interesting to hear that.
And one of the things I found is Amazon is so good at what they do that it's really easy for people. I'm not going to underplay that it's easy to go out and make money because it isn't with a successful product, but Amazon has made it easy for people to start small businesses selling some products at the expense of not really understanding a lot of other marketing principles or how you market off of Amazon. So that's something that as they grow, they have a tendency that they need to look in there and know that there's other marketplaces, other distribution channels for it. So
makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah. So I guess what you're saying is Amazon's done such a great job of creating a selling machine, as the word goes, that they make us very, because we don't have to educate ourselves to get started, then we can fail to educate ourselves if we're not careful. So it's what we have to, right? Which is where you step in. So
hopefully, thank you. A little bit, I can just share some experience.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a very serious experience. I mean, for, you know, a lot of people are within the sort of Amazon echo chamber that I interview, and that's great to be, to get domain specific knowledge is very, very important. But equally, I'm a big believer in the further I go that getting the big principles right gives you longer term skill sets at last. And, you know, if you get fantastic at manipulating certain Amazon systems that work for 6 months, that's all very well. But then you've got to start from scratch if it's that tactical. So tell us
more
about... I want
to touch on something before you move on. I just want to touch on something you just mentioned, and that is the suspension thing. I just spoke at a conference in New York called the Sellers Velocity Conference. And there were six speakers, and there was only two of us that talked about marketing and growing your business. The others were all copyright lawyers and tax lawyers, and it was all about what you just mentioned. How do you protect your listings from getting suspended? And that seemed to be just as much of a concern or more than, you know, worrying about other types of marketing they're doing. So it's a very big issue that, again, I don't have a lot of expertise in that area, but that's happening not just in, you know, Great Britain, but also all over. That's something that people are starting to do seminars about and get more education.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we've had Joshua Price and who also had CJ Rosenbaum and various other people from Amazon Sellers Lawyer, which is CJ's a company over in New York. So yeah, well, that's quite a familiar topic on the show. And I think it is one of the things I address, because it's not the sort of thing you want to dwell on, but you need to have A, a contingency plan, and then B, if it happens, you need to know who to turn to sort it out. So, but it is a reason to go on to other channels. So talking of which then, what's your view on that? I mean, would you say that having an alternative channel, given, as you said, that it is not easy to set up, say, a Shopify or any form of e-commerce store and actually make it profitable and get traffic affordably compared to Amazon, it's way harder. But is it just a defensive maneuver in your opinion to mitigate the risk of suspension? So maybe you make, you know, $500,000 a month on Amazon and you make $50,000 a month on your Shopify store. Is it just to keep the lights on? Or do you think there's a bigger picture there that needs to be considered?
I think it's a bigger picture, and I think it's a very viable way to grow your business. Is at some point, you're either going to max out on Amazon, or the competition, which you mentioned earlier, is going to see your success and dive into the marketplace and destroy your margins. And so it's partially a defensive maneuver, but I've never had a lot of success, you know, doing a marketing campaign just from strictly a defensive maneuver. It does offer you protection, but I think that the best reason for doing it is if you seriously, and again, this wouldn't apply necessarily to all your listeners, but if you seriously want to start looking at other ways of growing your business, you need to start looking at how you can generate revenue through some of the other distribution channels. And the, kind of the advice I give to people is, you just mentioned it a little bit, is I think the first thing they do, and it'll help with the consumer education, is they need to start a website. And that's where they start delivering content and start building their brand and tell the story about the business. And if, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit about videos, where they can be posting videos. Then if they want to take the next step and turn that into e-commerce because they have traffic on the site, that's a decision that they can make. But I think that it kind of, I like to use a hub, a spoke and a wheel with a hub. And your website is really the hub where all your content is, and then also you can start to do e-commerce from there, and Amazon becomes a really big spoke. But then there's other spokes that feed into that hub. You know, if you want to, again, social media, Facebook advertising, PR, other online stores, and that's kind of the way I like to set it up. But they should really start from a content standpoint with their own website, because that's fairly easy to do.
Okay, interesting. So you're thinking of, I suppose it chimes in with James Shramko. Have you come across him? That is an Australian no-nonsense business coach, but he's more in this sort of digital marketing space, I guess. But he did sell physical products. I think at one point he ran a big Mercedes-Benz dealership. So he's not quite in the e-commerce kind of space. But James is always talking about own the race course. In other words, so don't just, you know, have a horse in the race, but then if they shut down the race course, you're in trouble, which is rather like a seller on Amazon, but own the thing. And that includes also the idea of a hub being your own website and spokes in the wheel being other things, which, you know, Facebook could always shut your advertising channel down. That happens quite a lot, it seems. YouTube can suspend your entire account, even if you've got millions of views. That happens as well. So I guess it's hard as an Amazon seller sometimes not to see these things as just risk mitigation. But I think what you're sort of implying is you have to have a bigger picture, bigger vision than that.
Yeah. And the reason I said it's not necessarily risk mitigation is it goes back to the basic philosophy of direct-to-consumer marketing. And that is, as you're trying to build this off Amazon business, you're doing it with a direct response mindset, and how you can most efficiently get people to respond to any type of advertising or message that you're doing. And that's the most effective way for that, in my experience, for any small business to start to build their business outside of Amazon type of thing.
Excellent. So that, I think we're going to wrap this episode up on that, because I know that people will be hungry to get the specifics of video marketing. Let's address that in the next episode. But I want to leave that on there, because I think we've actually got some nice big picture concepts. And I think the mindset of getting people to efficiently respond to things as a direct response kind of mindset is a really, really, really good concept to leave people with there. So have you got any parting thoughts for this episode on that mindset? Any other sort of advice for people?
Oh, absolutely. Well, just to reinforce what you just mentioned, whether they know it or not, they're doing direct-to-consumer marketing. It's just that Amazon's doing all the heavy lifting. So you're just basically taking a concept that you're already doing. Amazon is in between you and the consumer right now, and you want to develop that direct communication, if possible, without breaking any rules from Amazon. And the way to do that is with your own website. And then just to kind of as a little teaser, that we're going to be talking in the next episode with some four companies that are doing very well on Amazon. We already mentioned Pluggable, but there's a consumer product called Sous Vide Supreme. There's a supplement company called Organifi, which is probably the largest seller of green juices and juice powder juice mixes on Amazon. And then a company, another good friend of mine called Dazity, that sells really big products, pool tables, ping pong tables, air hockey tables. And again, they're a high six-figure Amazon business, and they do all of the fulfillment themselves because Amazon's great at shipping small packages, but not really good at shipping big packages. And there's something that all of these companies have in common, which we're going to talk about, which is the video production and video marketing that they do. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they've been able to grow to the size they have. And they all are doing this type of video marketing.
Excellent. Well, that's a very very nice teaser, I have to say. Yeah, those are some very juicy sounding names. So look forward to finding out more about that in the next episode. Thank you very much, Rick.
Great. Thank you.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.